7 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. I stand corrected.
Right. I only say that because my wife reminded me that I was meeting. And I said, oh, crap, it is 6 o'clock.
Yeah. I will now call this special session of council to order this day, Tuesday, January 27th, 2026. Roll call, please.
Cody Browning.
Here.
Doug McCauley.
Here.
Greg McMaster.
Here.
Terry Meek.
Here.
Chris Shea.
Here.
Tonight's agenda is to address the industrial power rate modification that was last established in 1988, 37 plus years ago. So I'll turn this over to Mr. Pfizer. You will take it from there.
Yeah, so we've got, if you're not familiar with John Courtney, there he is up on the big screen. John has been with the city since probably 1986 or 87, when Clyde Light and Power was coming into existence. He's been our power portfolio and rate consultant all those years. A lot of stories John can share with you, especially when some late night meetings were going on at Whirlpool in the middle of the night to get them on board with Clyde Light and Power. So, John, I'll turn it over to you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, and I assume that the presentation council members have a copy of that, what I sent you, Paul?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, as Paul said, or someone mentioned earlier, that the industrial power rate, the rate that basically applies to your larger industrial customers, started out initially Whirlpool, and now Revere and Evergreen are both on this IP rate, and soon to be added is going to be the Northwoods facility. And just a little bit more background, as Paul said, I was working with the city back when you, as we like to say it, reestablished your municipal electric system there, because you did have one prior to 1965. And as a part of that process of kind of getting the system up and running, the plan involved initially serving just the Whirlpool plant by building a couple of 69,000 volt, or what we said called 69 KV transmission lines that connect to the American Electric Power transmission system over in the Fremont area. And in conjunction with that plan was to, buy power from AEP and initially sell power to Whirlpool, and then the city would then build out the rest of its electric system by building a couple of substations, one on each end of town, and then serving the rest of the city customers at distribution voltage. So that was the original plan. And Whirlpool at that time, was fully supportive of what the city was doing, but they wanted some assurance that they weren't going to get allocated more cost than what the city was incurring to serve them. And so in particular, there was going to be some debt that was being issued for the transmission lines, a separate debt being issued for the substations and distribution system. Whirlpool, who was represented by legal counsel out of Columbus, a guy by the name of Sheldon Taft, who's since retired, but and the city attorney, by the way, I should give him at least some mention, was Greg Ottinger. The Whirlpool and the Whirlpool attorney were concerned that they wanted to pay their fair share of costs, they didn't want to pay more than their fair share of costs and didn't want to be stuck paying for distribution facilities that weren't required to serve them. So we established this, or the city, I should say, established this industrial power rate or IP rate. And the rate basically has, and still has even in the new one, and you'll see it under general rate concept in that attachment to the ordinance, that the intent of the Schedule IP is to allocate to each customer receiving service under this schedule only those costs which are reasonably attributed to providing service to the customer at 69 KV or 69,000 volts. So that was the general intent. And while the rate's been around a long time, almost pushing now close to 40 years, it's worked well. And Whirlpool has and the other IP rate customers have only paid costs associated with serving them at 69 kV, and they've not had to contribute to costs to serve customers served at distribution voltage. The second page of the presentation handout, you can see in the bullet list there, I mean, it's what we call a formula rate. I don't take a claim for coming up with the idea. Sheldon Taft and Greg Ottinger actually are the ones that really developed a lot of this concept of this formula rate, where we allocate power supply cost, and transmission related costs directly to the IP customers and to the city's distribution load. And like I say, this has worked pretty well. Initially, your power supply was a lot simpler. You basically bought all of your power from AEP, American Electric Power, at a what we call full requirements rate. And that rate basically had a few components. It had an energy charge, it had a demand charge, and it was pretty straightforward how to allocate those costs. But then, as we'll talk here in a little bit, over time, your power supply arrangements have kind of migrated to more of a portfolio approach where you have multiple suppliers now, not just AEP. And transmission costs are now being allocated or determined on a different basis than what they were back in 1988. And I might mention, just by the way, this presentation that you've all got, you'll notice that the date was from November of 2024. This was a presentation that we actually gave to what we refer to as the big three, the big three being the IP rate customers, Whirlpool, Revere, and Evergreen Plastics. And as I said, now we're going to have a fourth one starting shortly. But and the reason we did this back in 24 was we wanted to make the IP rate customers aware of this change that was coming to the IP rate and how we allocate some of those transmission and capacity related costs. And we wanted to let them know about that in advance, because as we'll talk a little bit, those get allocated kind of on an arrears basis, looking backward at load contributions. And we wanted them to be able to take advantage of this change. So might point out too as well that your transmission debt did get retired in December 2021. And so even though we still have that in the formula rate, in case you were to issue debt at a later date, your debt actually on the transmission system has been retired. So slide three, or page three, kind of talk about the concerns. And as I said, this existing formula, while it worked well early on, is no longer consistent with the way that you're basically paying for AEP transmission costs and what's referred to as PJM capacity charges. And PJM is basically the independent system operator or regional transmission organization that operates the transmission grid all the way from the East Coast to Chicago, basically. And you're, by being connected to AEP, you're a part of the PJM transmission grid and subject to the way that they then recover costs for, you know, moving power across the transmission system and for making sure that there's adequate generation capacity to meet the loads on the PJM system. And that's what kind of referred to as the PJM capacity charges. So now the AEP transmission charges are based on you get allocated those based on the city's load during the prior year, what we call one CP or one coincident peak demand on the AEP system. And ironically, we may have hit one of those just this morning. They either occur on a hot summer day or the coldest winter day. And we've kind of been bouncing real close to establishing that peak, here with all this cold weather going on. The PJM capacity charges, on the other hand, are based on, the city's peak load contribution during the five highest peaks on the PJM system. And that's looking back at the prior, what we call planning year. And the planning year runs from June through May. So charges that you're incurring right now for PJM capacity are actually based on your contribution to peaks that occurred in 2024. But you pay those in the, you know, in the following year. So you're kind of in the 25, 26 recovery year. So that's just kind of how these costs get allocated. And again, that's quite a difference from the way that we're, you know, doing it under the formula rate, under the IP rate. So slide 4 kind of talks about the proposed modification, or modifications, I should say. Basically, what we're looking to do here is to separate out those AEP transmission and those PJM capacity charges out of the power supply demand-related cost and allocate them based on the way they're incurred. Again, transmission being on that one CP basis and, you know, PJM capacity on the 5 coincident peak events. So that's basically what we're doing. This is going to allow the IP customers to, you know, realize a direct benefit by reducing their load during the 1 and the 5 CP events. And we're in right now, the way we're charging it, while there is a benefit if they do reduce their load, that benefit kind of gets spread out over all of the both IP rate customers as well as the city's distribution customers. And so the Whirlpool, for example, or Revere or Evergreen, if they can reduce their load during the 1 CP event or the 5 CP events, that does create a savings or a reduction in cost for the city, but they don't see the direct benefit from that. And that's why we kind of wanted to, you know, again, share this with them back in late 2024 so that they could take advantage of reducing their peaks in 2025. And some of them, you know, have actually done that in anticipation of this rate change, you know, coming in 2026. So that's really kind of, you know, the reason for this change. I don't know if any of you looked at the prior rate, but this rate is very similar in the way it's set up. It's still a formula rate. The components are allocated based on formulas, or the costs, I should say, are allocated based on various formulas. But the big key difference here is that we've pulled out the AEP transmission cost as well as the PJM capacity cost so that we can allocate them more directly in line with the way that those costs are incurred. And I think with that, I'll try to see if anybody's got any questions.
John, you?
Yes.
You had mentioned that you had discussed this with the big three in 2024, or did you not?
That's correct.
Okay. What was the reception to this new adjustment?
I think they were all very receptive. We'd had discussions in prior years with them about this as well, and they were all aware that because of the constraint of the existing IP rate schedule, they were aware that they were basically being allocated these transmission and capacity costs on their load at the time of the city's peak load every month. And so they knew that, and everybody was kind of aware of it. And quite honestly, there wasn't a real advantage to them reducing their load during the 1 or the 5 CP events, especially the 5 CP events, because the capacity charge from PJM was relatively inexpensive. It was pretty low. And kind of put it in perspective, and I know that maybe you wouldn't relate, but on a dollar per kilowatt month basis, basically kind of on a demand charge basis, was less than a dollar per kilowatt month. But then in 2024, we had an auction. PJM does an auction every year for capacity going out into the future. And that capacity price jumped from less than a dollar to more than $9. So we saw, to more than $8. It was about a 9 times increase in the rate. And subsequent to that, we've had additional capacity auctions in 2025, where that price now is exceeding $10. So we've seen kind of a tenfold increase in the PJM capacity price. There really is the need to do this so those customers can see a direct benefit by then reducing their load during those peaks. By the way, the city already does this themselves with peaking generation, you know, the peaking units that you have, or the solar in the summertime, if it's a summer peak, obviously help to reduce the city's load, you know, the rest of the city's load, the distribution load. So the city's been taking advantage of this, but that savings is kind of been getting shared with everybody, including the IP customer. So it's not just really for the benefit of the, you know, the IP customers, but also for the benefit of the city's other customers.
Thank you. That clears that up for me. Questions from anyone else?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I also saw in the monthly billing there was some wordage about behind the meter generation and stuff like that. Is that new to this contract, or was that in there before?
No, that has been added. Obviously, we didn't anticipate back in 1988 that customers were going to be looking to install their own generation behind their meter. You know, the cost of generation back then relative to what we were paying for, you know, that, you know, capacity was pretty small, or, you know, it was pretty high relative to capacity costs. But that being the case, we now could see the potential of customers installing behind the meter generation, and that could be in the form of peaking generation, or as you all know, Whirlpool has been discussing putting in behind the meter solar and wind generating facilities. And so we have put language in this that, first off, would if a customer were to do that, we're going to, one way that, and you know, we want to protect the city's other customers from not now having to pick up other capacity, you know, power supply related costs that were currently being covered by that IP customer. So we put language in that would basically fix that customer's allocation of power supply demand-related costs at their contribution for the, you know, 12-month period prior. So that kind of and that's consistent, by the way, with what Whirlpool has been suggesting, you know, that they would do to keep everybody, as we say, whole, is that they would continue to pay their share of, you know, power supply demand-related costs that they're currently paying on various resources, you know, subsequent to putting in their behind-the-meter generator. So we tried to address that. The other was that, you know, there was a concern about Whirlpool or any of these IP customers putting in behind-the-meter generation and reducing their load below zero. And we put a limit that if they do that, their you know, determination of their demand for transmission and capacity would not go below zero. So that's another, you know, some language we've added that wasn't in the original rate schedule.
All right. Thank you.
John, is it accurate to assume, though, then that these IP customers, if we do not find ways to reduce their rate during the CP events, that their rate could be more with this new contract?
Well, it could be more, or yeah, we just don't know. I mean, it just will depend now, you know, what their load is during those peaks. If they, in theory, if they didn't do anything to reduce their load, then they're going to get allocated, you know, approximately what they were allocated before. But again, the method that we're using right now is we're looking each month at their contribution to the city's peak load, and that's not consistent with the way we incur the transmission capacity costs. I'll be honest, I have not calculated yet what this is going to, how this is going to impact, you know, the IP rate customers or the city's distribution customers. But the bottom line is, it's the way they should, these costs should be allocated under the concept of, you know, we're trying to allocate costs based on the way they're incurred. And so, you know, it's really something that needs to be done, whether that means, you know, some of these guys might see an increase, some might see a decrease. We just don't know. I did some numbers about a year and a half when we met with these guys in 2024. I did some calculations then. Of course, that was before they were able to take advantage. And it had very little impact. But again, we don't know what's going to happen, you know, now that they're able to do this. We don't know if some of them are going to do something to reduce their load. You know, Whirlpool is still talking about putting in this behind the meter, you know, wind and solar. Obviously, for them, this could have a significant benefit. But keep in mind, if they reduce their load by, you know, a megawatt, 5 megawatts, you know, whatever the number is, and reduce the city's cost because of that, we're just passing on that reduced cost to them. So, you know, once we get this in place, then going forward, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't affect the rest of the customers.
Okay, thank you, John.
Yeah.
John, I have one additional question. On at least 5 separate occasions, I've asked the question to define what making Clyde whole means, and I have yet to receive an answer for that. Could you define that?
Well, that's what this rate schedule is designed to do. As I mentioned, that language that we added, I think it was on page 4 under the monthly power billing demand, where we added at the end of that. If you go back and read, you'll see that and compare it to the old rate schedule, it virtually reads the same, except for the last sentence that we added that says that, you know, if customer installs behind the meter generation, their monthly power billing demand should not be less than their highest monthly power billing demand occurring during the 12 months immediately preceding the installation of the on-site generation. So that's the make whole provision. That's what makes sure that Whirlpool, to the extent they install behind the meter generation, are going to continue to pay the same amount that they're currently paying or would have been paying in the year before for the demand related costs for power supply resources. And that's how we kind of have them make everybody else whole. If we didn't do that, then, you know, they would be reducing their billing demand for all power supply resources, and all the rest of the customers who don't put behind the meter generation in, or including your distribution customers, are going to have to pay for that. And so that's the language that is kind of makes the rest of the city whole. If they put in that behind the meter, you know, wind and solar project.
Good. Thank you, because I've been searching for that answer now for over a year and a half, and that was the best explanation I've ever had. So thanks.
Yep.
John, Zach Selvey here. I have a question, and sometimes I ask questions just for the listening audience at home. Do you think this will have any, including ancillary, effects on our residential power users?
No, when I ran those numbers back, you know, in 2004, Zach, we didn't see really any significant change one way or the other. And again, getting this in place, all we're doing now is passing any benefit from somebody reducing their load during the 1 in 5 coincident peak events, we're just passing that directly to them. So, you know, and again, we weren't seeing any of that activity before. So, it's not going to negatively impact anybody. It's just going to basically pass the benefit directly on to the person who causes that benefit to happen.
So it's not going to change prices so much as make it more fair who's paying those prices and when.
That's correct.
Thank you, John.
Yep.
Would there be anything else for John? Thank you. Thank you for your explanation, and thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, guys. And by the way, I forgot to mention, I appreciate you letting me do this remotely. My wife was a little concerned about me going out and driving to Clyde tonight. So I certainly appreciate the availability of doing this by remote. So
I'm glad it happened that way. I drove to Port Clinton today, and that wasn't a fun drive there and back. So
yeah, I can imagine. So. Well, again, thank you. And by the way, you know, the plan is that, you know, normally you do a 2-reading process. There's no rush to do this, but we wanted to kind of get the reading process started. You know, you can take this up at your next meeting and pass it. And we'll probably miss the January usage bill that goes out at the end of February, but I don't think anybody, you know, we'll have a big complaint about that. So, but yeah, that's just want to kind of get this in the works sooner than later. So.
All right. Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, if you don't have anything for me, I'm going to log off.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. We'll see you.
Yeah.
He talks about no fun of a drive. I went out and was purposely drift busting today.
You had that big
monster. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not listening to these government stay-at-home orders.
Little interesting fact, John has a 15-year-old grandson who is just a hockey phenom, and he recently signed a manager. So
really?
He has quite a few pro teams watching.
Wow. And wow. For a youngster, wow.
His name's Liam Martin.
Liam Martin.
Sam,
John lives in Finley also?
It sounds like a hockey name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Finley kid?
Yes, but he plays with Little Caesars, I want to say, out of Detroit.
Oh, Detroit, okay. The Red Wings grooming team.
Yeah. A lot of the hockey kids go live for like a year in the Dakotas.
Actually, Doug, I think his dad played at Finley.
Okay.
I got a number.
Okay. Well, Council, we have before us an ordinance this evening to address the repealing and replacing of the city's industrial power rate according to all the information that John provided for us, updating it. So if we can move forward with this and the first reading. So would you please assign a number and give the first reading?
Ordinance number 2026-16, repealing,
I'm sorry, 1-5.
My hearing's not good. Apparently when she whispered it. Let's start over. Ordinance number 2026-15, repealing and replacing the city's industrial power rate schedule, IP. Whereas the city previously established an industrial power rate schedule, schedule IP, on November 15, 1988, pursuant to ordinance 1988-84, and whereas the method of charges for certain power supply-related services have significantly changed since 1988, and whereas the city's utility rate consultant, Courtney and Associates, has recommended that the city revise Schedule IP to reflect those changes. Now, therefore, be it ordained by the Council of the City of Clyde, State of Ohio, Section 1, effective with all bills rendered after the effective date of this ordinance, the existing Schedule IP is hereby repealed and replaced by the Schedule IP attached hereto as Exhibit A and made a part of this ordinance. Section 2, this ordinance shall be in full force and effect at the earliest date provided by law. There is an attachment.
Okay. Ordinance 2026-15 has had its first reading. I'll now open this up for any further discussion. Mrs. Beek?
I have none.
Mr. Browning?
Is this going to be available to the public, too, the presentation you kind of showed, the PDF? Or no?
It's a public document.
On the website?
It can be. Sure.
It is a public document. Yeah. We don't always post everything we get from speakers. It goes in the minutes, but it doesn't always get posted online, but if you'd like it to be, it can be, yeah.
I just thought it was informative and just how he even explained it too. I mean, I read through all this quite a few times, and then now actually having him do it, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, from the ordinance to this was night and day.
Yeah, it's pretty wordy in here.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but yeah, it'll be available.
Yeah, and we can make it available whenever you guys request to make it available.
Okay.
Mr. McMaster.
No, I like the way that it's laid out and separates things out based on the way we're doing things now, so
yeah.
I have no issues with it.
It's obviously after 37 and plus years time for an adjustment to this and a fair adjustment. And again, John's handout versus the legislation is completely opened my eyes to what this is saying. In a simplified form, so. Mr. Pfizer, anything to add?
No, sir.
Okay. So, we've had the first reading. Next reading, I believe we can still do this. There's a time frame to be February 3rd at our next regular scheduled session.
Yep.
Okay. So, will there be anything else? We go to the order? We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Shea, second by Mr. McMaster. Roll call.
Mayor McCauley.
Aye.
Councilman McMaster.
Aye.
Vice Mayor Shea.
Aye.
Councilwoman Lee.
Aye.
Councilman Browning.
Aye.
Okay. Okay, this special session is now adjourned.